Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't hide from the parts of our story that almost took us out. We use them because the truth is, some people know what it feels like to hit rock bottom. And I don't mean you just had a shitty day, I mean hopeless, lost, the kind of place where you don't even recognize yourself anymore. And this is the thing I know to be true. Most people stay there. But some people don't. Some people decide, like, this is not how my story is going to end. And God doesn't leave you in that place. He meets you exactly where you are and He gives you the chance to rebuild. So if you've ever felt like you went too far or you're just down too much, this conversation is definitely going to speak to you. Today's guest is Sarah Snow, from meth addiction to motherhood to building a multi six-figure life. Sarah, thank you so much for coming in to the hot seat today. I start everyone from the same place. Give me your elevator pitch. Who are you? What do you do? And what makes you special?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be
Yeah.
here. My name's Sarah Snow. I'm from Colorado. Just like you said, I struggled with meth addiction my entire adolescence. I now am a mother of two. I had my oldest daughter 11 years ago. She just turned 11. And then I just had another baby. She's 3 months old.
Oh,
And
congrats.
thanks.
I'm like,
So,
can I smell her through the camera? This is
I
my
know she's
favorite.
so. Me and my
Yeah.
husband talk about it all the time. We're
That
like,
is
she's,
my addiction. Like, that is
oh, that, and it's
my
so
current.
addicting.
I have
It's so
six.
good.
So trust me, like, it doesn't get old. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So we're really living like in the baby bubble. It's been so
Yeah.
beautiful. But yeah, so I feel like being a mom is my first like passion and truest purpose in this life to raise like really strong, I want to say independent, but I hate that, like strong independent women. But
Yeah.
for lack of a better wording, like I feel like that is my true, like God's given purpose. And that is initially like what pulled me out of that addiction when literally nobody thought I was going to be able to make it, not even me. I ended up getting sober like towards the end of my pregnancy, actually.
Yeah.
And then having her, it was like something just clicked in my brain, and I've been sober ever since. So I'm so grateful for that and that awakening. So I love being a mom, and that is also kind of what catapulted me into just like real life. And then I got licensed as an esthetician in 2017, and I started my med spa business in 2020. So yeah, I've grown a successful med spa as a solo esthetician, which has been lots of fun. I love doing
Yeah.
that. And then I recently, last year, started online high ticket sales, just so that I had another source of income. So that way, with the baby and everything, I had, something that I didn't have to rely trading my time with.
Yeah. I love that. And I'm just going to say, okay, first of all, I'm from Colorado and I too struggled with the same addiction. So maybe it's in the water over there, you know?
There's a lot of it out
God,
here.
it's so crazy. It's so crazy. But that was like many lifetimes ago for me. Like, 40 years ago, I don't know, a very long
Oh,
time
I
ago.
love that.
It
No,
makes
that's
so
cool.
much sense to me that you are in the beauty industry, because if you guys are not watching this on YouTube, okay, she's drop dead gorgeous and I just want her hair. Like, I want to smell her baby and I want to touch her hair, okay? So how weird can we get on the show? Because it's not even the baby glow though. I could tell, like, you are shining from the inside out. So
Thank
I just want to say, like, all of this looks really good on you. Healing looks really good on you. Take us back. Like, let's start in the core of that. Like, what did rock bottom actually look like for you? And what did hopeless feel like in your body and mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, hopeless was pretty much my whole existence. I feel from like 14, I started doing meth when I was 14. I started shooting up meth when I was 17. And I remember telling, I was in and out of juvie and jails, like my whole adolescence, rehab, all of that.
Yeah.
Nothing ever clicked. I didn't really have any desire. I had no concept of self-worth back then. I had no desire to like get my shit together. I remember telling my mom in ROP, which is like a juvenile facility, and I told her, like, this is going to be your life forever. Like, we are going to be doing this for the rest of my life. So just get used to it. And she's just crying. And like, looking back, I'm like, oh my God, like, but that's really like where I was at. I mean, I
Yeah.
truly believed that I would be somebody who would be addicted to drugs forever and like
Yeah.
probably end up a porn star, and that was just what I was gonna do.
Yeah.
And So I actually, after getting out of that treatment facility, I was sober for quite some time. Quite some time back then. It was like 10 months. But I got out and I actually got on Accutane. I used to have really bad acne. And it was through that Accutane period that took me, I ended up like relapsing. It made me really depressed. And then it was that last year stint of me using that was definitely my rock bottom. Again, like I was shooting up. I would be up for 8, 10 days at a time and then crash. I mean, I would like just looking back, I mean, I never had a job. I didn't sell drugs. I was always dating drug dealers. And so I was somehow just always like taken care of. Like my very best friend was gay and he was also a dope dealer. So like somehow I was always high. I was always provided for, but it was like such a miserable time. And then, you know, I got pregnant and I found out I was pregnant in the summertime, but I kept using. And I didn't have any intention to have the baby at the time. And that was like, I mean, everybody, my mom, when she found out I was pregnant, my mom, my best friend, so many people were like, Sarah, you cannot have this baby. Like, you have to have an abortion. Like, you cannot, like, this, you know, look at your life. Like, look at what you're doing. And I was like, yeah, well, and I didn't really have any intention to, but you know, again, just it was like such divine intervention in my life. I got arrested for car theft and possession, and I was like 15 weeks pregnant. And then when I got bonded out of jail, at that point, I was like, well, I'm 18 weeks pregnant. I feel like this is too far along to have an abortion. So what am I gonna do? And it was that all like combined together that I was like, well, if I don't have this, if I don't get sober, I knew from my juvenile life, if I didn't get sober, I would be in and out and in and out and in and out. And if I was in and out pregnant, I would have the baby in jail. So it was like this whole divine happening that brought me out of it. But yeah, I mean, hopeless in the sense that I just was so lost in it, but also so okay with being lost in it that I never, looking back, if you were to tell that version of me where I am now, she would be like, get the fuck out of here. Like, no motherfucking way. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Well, is it when is the moment that you really connected to, even just being consciously aware that you are pregnant, you have this life inside of you, you had to make this choice? Was there something where you were like, okay, I get it? Or did it actually take like you having her?
No, it was that. I mean, it was me getting arrested, ironically. It like the pregnancy alone, sadly, in the state that I was in was not enough for me to snap out of it. But it was me getting that when I got arrested and me coming out. And actually, I didn't quite stop right then. I was on like pretrial. So I had this when you're a meth addict on pretrial, they give you like this watch that monitors your sleep. And so I was still using, I'd been up for almost 7 days. And I remember I had to go in and meet with my pretrial person and like download my watch's data. And I was like, I'm going to go to jail. And so I'm like sitting there and they have it plugged in and their computer is crashing. And so they're like, we're not able to do this. Like, you're going to have to come back another day. And I was like, and it was then that I was like, this is my, I need to get this shit figured out. And so it was that, it was all of those like events that happened that I was like, this is a sign, like I need to get sober. And so I checked myself into like it was like a mom's house rehab. And I didn't end up staying there, but I was there like 2 weeks, which was long enough for me to sleep it off and then, you know, have a week of kind of like not being high. And I've been sober ever since. And that was December 20th, 2014.
Congrats to you, babe. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Addiction isn't just physical, though. And I think anybody who understands what addiction is, I think they know that. So, like, in those moments, like before you get clean, what drives you to this and what's happening emotionally for you?
Well, I mean, you know, then like with meth especially, it's a bit of an emotionless drug. Like you don't really experience much emotion on it. So of course I had this like, you know, realization of like, damn, I cannot keep going on like this. But it wasn't until after I quit that in that week that I slept and then afterwards that I was like a mess. I was like crying all the time. Plus I was pregnant, but I was
Pregnant
like,
hormones.
yes. And then, because it was like, you know, meth really numbs you to everything like that. It was like, and I've always said that it really makes you and turns you into such like a shell of a person that you're not feeling and experiencing any of those emotions. Or I wasn't at all connected to my body to like know what was happening. You know, it was almost like I was just completely numbed off to everything. And so then it was like after that week of sleep, then I was like just crying. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, you know, and then mixed with me being in this rehab and they were like trying to tell me what to do, I was like, I'm not court ordered to be here. I can leave. And so I left. And but it didn't matter. But yeah, it was just, it was a time too where I was like, what the fuck have I gotten myself into? What am I going to do? You know, I had the legal troubles, but I wasn't like sentenced yet. And so I was really scared. I was also really proud of like having come out of the juvenile stuff, and my record as a juvenile was expunged, or not expunged, but like sealed, you know what I mean? So I was really upset with myself for catching a case as an adult, because I was like, dang, this will be on my adult record. So there was a lot there, just lots of disappointment, shame, all of that.
Well, I mean, you're talking about how it's kind of a numbing drug. So what is little Sarah trying to numb? I mean, you're young. What is that experience that you're just like, I'm unplugging?
You know, that's such an interesting question. And people ask me that my whole life, being in and out and having like social workers involved in my life and things like that. And they'd always be like, why are you running away from home? Like, what is so bad? And for me, it's interesting. Like, I never had like a severely traumatic event happen, or like my home life, like I was from like a suburban home, like, you know, and I would run away. And ultimately, I think, and this may seem so like minimal, but I feel that I am somebody who feels so deeply. I'm very like emotional and very sensitive. And I feel like that got shut off when I was really young, because my parents were always like, you're too much, you know, you're out of control. And I remember like my parents telling me that I was out of control from such a young age, and I wasn't. And I remember telling them, like, I'm not out of control, but I can show you out of control if you want me to. And that's kind of what happened. I
No,
mean, not
that
that it was
makes
their fault, but it was
no,
like
I
such
know.
a self-fulfilling prophecy of like, oh, you want to see out of control motherfuckers? Well, I'll give it to you. And I did. And then, you know, and then it was just like, then it was really out of control, and I couldn't, you know, catch it at that point. But I also had this like, again, no concept of self-worth. I had good parents. I feel like my relationship with my dad was never very good. He was very absent emotionally. And so then that led me to like being attracted to much older men, and just, you know, all of these really like
It all
risky
stacks up.
behaviors.
Do you ever catch yourself through this process of healing? You're clean. It's 2014. Do you ever catch yourself going back to that lie that your parents tried to kind of instill in you, where you would catch yourself like, man, I'm just too much?
Oh yeah. I mean, even still now to this day, I mean, and I'm like happily, healthily married. You know, I said like we just had a baby, but like even sometimes, like I'll tell my husband like, thanks for putting up with me, and he's like, I don't put up with anything. Like, I love you. Like, you know. But I mean, that's kind of been the theme forever. Like, even sometimes in friendships or like with business, like that's why I own my own business, because it's like as an employee, I can be too much. I'm like loud. I'm like in your face. You know. So I definitely find that that has always been a theme for me, but kind of learning to just embrace it and know that I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and that, you know, some people, you know, so I don't know if it's necessarily that my parents, that it was a lie. It's just that some people, I don't know if some people know how to handle like strong, big personalities like
And it's
mine.
it really is that. It's what people can handle, right? 'Cause
Yeah.
especially I'd say like our parents, our grandparents grew up in a culture where you weren't, especially females, like you're not to be loud and stand
Yeah.
up and like know your place, woman, you know?
Yeah,
So
exactly.
I definitely can see that, and you know, that's a hell of a journey 'cause I'm still on that. Like I'm still on that. How
Yeah.
did you start rebuilding your identity from this place of sobriety, and what would you say? I mean, what was your struggle like with getting clean and staying clean?
You know, again, like by the grace of God, and I'm very grateful, I didn't struggle with staying clean. And I'm not 100% sober. You know, I'll have a drink here and there now, and I was smoking weed before I was pregnant and stuff. So it's not been like this complete 100, like totalitarian, you know, like, but in terms of meth specifically, I mean, again, something in my brain just flipped a switch. And once I had that week where I slept, I woke up, you know, and I was like, I'm done. Like, it's like I just didn't ever want to get high again, which was I've never questioned it because I'm just so grateful that that was my
Yeah.
situation. I mean, one of my very best friends, he's still very much, he's like in prison, you know, and we're still in touch, but he's still very much in that life. And I know that that's not the experience for so many people. And
Yeah.
so I don't know. You know, again, I just say it was like my divine intervention
Yeah.
because I have no explanation for it. So I have not struggled with staying clean with meth, thankfully. And that's been really incredible. I have, though, I mean, because I feel like I do have that addictive personality, I've struggled in other areas,
Oh
you know,
yeah.
like during, like, it hasn't just all been rainbows and butterflies.
Yeah.
No, but like, you know, over COVID, I was drinking way too much. And I started my spa during COVID in
Yeah.
2020. And we were partying all the time because that was really all there was to do.
Yeah.
And so then I remember, like, you know, we'd been drinking all weekend. I was like smoking a cigarette in my garage. And I was like, damn, like, if I don't stop drinking and behaving in this reckless ass way, like, I have shit to lose now. Like, I have a family, I have a
Exactly.
kid, I have a
Yeah.
business that I just started. Like, if I don't stop, I'm going to lose all my shit, you know?
Yeah.
And so I've definitely kind of gone up and down just in ways of like relating to alcohol or smoking weed. And,
Yeah.
now I'm able to relate with those things in healthy ways, but I do still have a tendency to like want to overdo it. I just have to
Yeah.
be like, we're not going there.
Yeah. I flip-flop between alcohol and sugar. I feel like it's
Yeah.
there's this, and then it's like, okay, I'm not going to drink for a while, and suddenly I'm just eating everything that has sugar. So that addictive
Yes.
personality, I could very much relate. And now I'm like, I am, let's just say it, we have addictive personalities. So
Yeah.
what can I get addicted to that is not going to hurt me? Like, is there
Right. That is
anything
like
out there? So
healthy.
yeah, right. Thank God I found it, right? I found that in getting to sit with people like you every single day, getting to hear these stories. I don't get to dick around with the stuff that's gonna throw me off on the other side. But I mean,
Yeah.
I love your story. I can relate to so much of everything you're saying, especially, I mean, it was a dealer for me. My best friend came in and was like, "You look like shit. You're done. You're done." And I look in the mirror and I'm like, you know, face is jacked up, suffering. I
Yeah.
never been to rehab. Lived in juvie though, but I mean, I
Yeah.
emancipated as a ward of the state at like 15. And
Yeah.
so I'm on my own, and it was just that moment of like, wow, if your dealer says like you need to stop, there's probably something seriously wrong. So
Yeah.
thank God had a hand in that, 'cause I've never thought twice about it. Never thought
Yeah.
twice about it. Like, in fact, it's so weird. There's a buffet that my kids loved to go to for their birthday, and I swear when I go by the salad bar area, I can smell meth and I get nauseous. I'm like, I swear this is what it smells like. It's so weird. I get so
But
nauseous
there's
from that
I've
thing.
experienced that with different things,
Yeah.
like where and it'll take me back and I'm like, oh,
Oh,
like yeah.
how did I
How?
ever put
Yeah.
that in my nose? Like, my nose starts burning and I'm like, yeah, I'm ew. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell? But no, I mean, your story is incredible. I would say, you know, how did becoming a mom, because like you're changing identities really fast. You
Yeah.
go from, you know, fuck the world, I'm rebellious, I'm on my own, you guys all suck, to like something actually depends on you 24/7. How did that impact your transformation?
I mean, that was my whole transformation. You know, as I said, I mean, it's interesting too, because before I had my daughter, my oldest, I was always like, I never want kids. I didn't even like kids. Like, I didn't even
Yeah.
know what to do with kids. Like, people would be, there'd be a baby and I'd be like, okay, like, you
Yeah.
know, like, I didn't know anything about kids. And it was just so interesting. I mean, even just from day one, like just how I had such like a maternal instinct that kicked in, and it was just like so natural for me. And I mean, it impact like, yeah, it just, I mean, it completely changed who I was at my core. And ultimately, she is how I learned my purpose. Like that
Yeah.
she gave me that worth, like something to live for. And I had not ever had that before. Like, I really, as I said before, I had no concept of self-worth whatsoever. I would put myself in the riskiest situations. I'd meet people, I'd go to their house, like whatever. Like, it's, you know, again, by the grace of God, that nothing really terrible ever happened to me when I was in my addiction, because I was so fucking reckless.
Yeah.
But when I had her, it was just like, okay, like this is the meaning of life. Like, this is what I'm living for.
Right.
So, yeah.
I totally get that. Talking business, we'll go there a little bit because, like, someone listening, I mean, I imagine they're just like, how the hell do you go from survival to multi six figures? Like, how did your brain process that?
Well, so I went, like I said, I went to esthetician school in 2017, and I didn't start my business right away. I worked at a couple different med spas. But I am very much the person, the type of person who I don't like to be told what to do, obviously. I really like to, kind of do my own thing. And I think that this a strength of going through addiction and living so recklessly is that on the flip side, that now in my life as a healthy adult and even younger when I started my business, I have a tendency to like be able to make risky decisions and really not think twice about them. So like with starting a business during COVID, I was like, well, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like if I'm gonna do it, I'm just gonna do it. And if it fails, like I'll just be in the same situation that I'm in right now. Who cares? You know, I'm just gonna go for it. So I feel like it kind of gives me the ability to say fuck it more easily and just go for things. I really am a big advocate and believer that like, if you can bet on yourself and just go for the things that you want, like 9 times out of 10, you're gonna make that shit work. You know what I mean? And if you don't, it's only because there's a better avenue that it's rerouting you towards. So that belief alone is, I think, how I've been able to build everything. I think ultimately, anytime you are trying to create something, especially if you have a past similar to mine or, just a rough one, that you just ultimately have to have that belief. Like the belief comes first before anything else.
Is that the mindset shift that you think changed everything financially for you?
I think so. I mean, that was definitely the foundation of it, just the true belief that like I can do it. I've certainly done a lot of work on my like money beliefs, money mindset, the subconscious beliefs that like run the show, so to speak, and just rewiring because I had a lot of the like, I'm not worthy. Who am I to have this? Like, that shit. And that stuff still comes up. I feel like, every time I like up level or like I'm trying to hit a new financial goal, that will rear its ugly head again. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, where'd you come from? I thought I healed that. But it's like these beliefs that we have about ourselves. It's just about like rewiring that. And, I believe that like we're all destined to live out our truest heart's desires and that's all possible, but we just have to believe it's possible. I think that that's like the biggest block.
And that's the thing that, at the core of the show, like, I think people listen to these episodes, right? Like, they're listening to your story and they're like, I believe it's possible. I think the problem with that actually connecting is if they ask themselves that question, like, if I ask you, Sarah, is this possible? And you're like, yeah. And then I'm like, well, is it possible for you? And I think that's where people stop and they freeze and everybody's like, shit. Well, she did it. I mean, and it's why do you think it's so hard for them to connect that what is possible for other people is absolutely attainable for them?
Well, again, I think it just boils down to that like self-worthiness. Like it's like we're all so harsh on ourselves. We're all in our own minds all the time. So like we know like what we believe about ourselves and what we've been through, and we all want to make it like, oh, well, it's they did it, but I'm different. I could never, Whereas really like there's actually a universal law that I learned about when I was first like working on all my mindset stuff, and it's the law of divine oneness. And that is one of my favorite universal laws because if you look into it, it means just like what is possible for one is possible for all. And so if you're able to see yourself, or if you watch somebody else do something, you know that you could. It is physically possible for you to do it. Again, you just have to believe it.
I love that. I want to talk a little bit about self-sabotage because if my instincts are correct, you probably know a little bit about this.
Correct.
So tell me why, where are people self-sabotaging when they're trying to change their life and why?
I mean, I think it can come all the time, especially when in the early stages of trying to change your life. I mean, I feel like a lot of times the self-sabotage can come from like future tripping. Like you get too far ahead of yourself and like of where you want to be, that your mind is too focused on that versus like just taking the next step. And so then you're like sabotaging it out of fear or again, out of feeling like you're not worthy. I mean, for me, like I'm I still find myself self-sabotaging, and it doesn't look as crazy as it did,
Of
once upon a
course.
time,
Yeah.
but it's like I'll create like chaos for myself, or I'll like create like tons of like procrastination. Or if I know I'm supposed to do something for my business and I'm like, oh, but I have so much laundry, like I'm just gonna clean my house instead. So it can like come up in so many different ways, I think. But especially like in those early days, I think the most important thing for self-sabotage is to just focus on the very next step versus like too far ahead.
I very much agree with that. And I think, for you guys listening, I think just falling in love with the process is such a hack to
Yes.
like getting your shit together. If you just fall in love with the process, it's the outcomes are great, right? Like, we're all going to be moving for an outcome, but an outcome is going to be there forever because that's the potential of our life, is that life experience. We're going to go through it. So there's always going to be a finish line. It never really stops. And if you could just fall in love with like what you're doing in the moment, I think that's been my self-sabotage hack, and I still do it. Like, I'm looking at my, my office is a shit show right now, right? It's like I clean it and it's good for a week and then it's just a disaster. Like, there's a cheesecake box empty sitting on my dresser from like 2 days ago. Okay. So I'm like, what is going on? And it's one of those things where I stack it up because I know I'm going to put everything off and I'm going to clean. It's a weird cycle. So we're in it, but it's a part of that process, you guys. And it's how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. It's very simple. What would you say to someone who feels completely stuck right now?
That you're gonna figure it out. I mean, and that sounds so like cliche. Like
Yeah.
if I was the one that was stuck listening, I'd be like, bitch,
Yeah.
but really, I
Sure, I'm
mean,
gonna figure it out.
yeah. But like, and don't try to force it. Like, it's okay that you feel that way. It's okay that you feel stuck. And you can't be stuck forever though. And I hate the saying this too shall pass, because it reminds me of my 12-step recovery days, but ultimately it's true. And like it's all seasons. Like there's so many different seasons in life, and I've been feeling like I'm in a season of stuckness lately. So, it's like you'll go through different things, and I don't have any advice to how to get out of the stuckness, but I promise that it will pass and that you'll get out of it. And then you'll look back and be like, damn, how the fuck did I get out of that? And sometimes you don't even notice that you're out of it until you're looking back at shit and you're like, wow, I've come so far.
No, I totally see that. And I don't, everybody's situation is different, but I feel like just acknowledging, if you guys could just acknowledge today, like, shit, I am really stuck. I'm stuck. And all you have to do is make a decision. Like, I want to change this. And you make a decision, and it's just one little tiny thing. If you do just the next right thing, the next right thing, maybe it's just take a fucking shower today. Like, just go take a shower, right? Or go for a walk outside, or send that damn email that's been sitting on your desk forever, or message that person, or just like the next right thing. I feel like just action changes everything,
And
right?
it's like you said, that one small step. And I think also too, in that moment of being stuck, sometimes we can just be so blinded by the stuckness, and rather than focusing on like, fuck, I'm so stuck right now, being like, I'm open to seeing things differently. How can I look at things differently? And then taking action from that energy.
Do you think people are, do you think it's that we're really stuck, or is that we're afraid of becoming someone new? Like, we're afraid of the next thing because we're always evolving and that's scary. So, are we really stuck, or are we just kind of afraid of what's next?
I find that I think that even just being stuck is a way of like self-sabotaging, like we were just talking about. I mean, of course, I'm sure there's times when people really do feel stuck, and but I think a lot of times it is out of like fear, and like our mind is trying to keep us like safe, and like because change and like evolution, self-evolution is like an unknown to our subconscious, and our minds want to keep us the same and keep us like, because that is what's familiar, that is what is safe. And so I think in our minds will be like, well, no, like we're stuck, we're not gonna move, because that is all it knows to keep us safe. So it's kind of like, a way to sabotage moving forward.
That makes a lot of sense. We're coming up on our time here, so my last question for you today, because I just kind of want the audience to recognize that we're always in the arena. Right? Like, you got clean, you kicked ass, you've done the things, but life still happens. It's just, it feels different now. So what does your life feel like today compared to who you were, your origin, Sarah?
Well, I mean, it doesn't even feel like the same life, you know. I look back at the life, you know, from when I was using, and I'm like, sometimes now talking about it, it's like I know it's my life, but I feel like I'm talking about a movie or like somebody else's experience, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, my life now is like my clients at my spa, sometimes I'll talk about my past and they'll be like, wow, I would have never guessed, you know. And it's like, it's such a blessing to just be where I am now. And I have like a healthy marriage, you know, my kids, and I'm like a functioning adult. I pay taxes. Like, you know, I'm not on probation or parole or anything. Like, you know, and I'm so far removed from that version of myself. I have such a peaceful, happy, like just stable, good life. And I'm so grateful for that. And I really used to hate like doing the same thing all the time. And not that my life day to day looks the same every day, but I really like relish in that peace of just like the calmness and the like lack of chaos that I have in my life now. And so I guess too, that's like what I want to say to anybody listening is like, you know, if you're somebody who's struggling with addiction or you're freshly sober, like there's just so much more life to live for on the other side.
I very much agree with that. Sarah, this is the part of the show where I get to tell you what I think makes you special.
Okay.
It's not just that you got out of all the shit, it's that you didn't stop there. You didn't just survive, you rebuilt. You took a life that felt completely broken and you turned it into proof that change is possible. And now, like, you're out here inspiring people, showing people that they're not too far gone, they're not too broken, they're not done. You are out here helping people to live their fullest potential experience in this life and to take action. I think that's powerful. I think it's rare. And I think that's what makes you special. And to everyone listening, you guys, rock bottom, it's not the end. It's the place where you get to decide. It's that decision, okay? If you're going to stay there or if you're going to rise. God did not bring you this far to leave you there, okay? So it's about being honest with yourself, having mad courage, and being really relentless. And please remember, you guys, your mess is your message. Even addiction, even the shame, even the version of you that didn't know how to get out, that's where your authority is built. And if you've been feeling that pull to use your voice to share your story to help someone else get out of what you've already survived, you guys, that's what I do. Okay. Brandon Lynette, the voice authority. I will help you take your story, raw, real, powerful as it is, and we could turn it into something that impacts people, whether that becomes a podcast or a platform or something bigger. Let's do it the right way. If you're ready to stop hiding, please come work with me. You guys message me. I do answer all my own messages. Okay. If this episode speaks to you, please share it with someone who you might think needs to hear it. Okay. Sarah's story needs to reach someone that I think you're completely selfish if you guys don't help us today. It takes like 1 second. Just share the show out with someone you think you could impact. Okay. Make sure you guys leave a review. Get resourced with Sarah. Is there a place where people can find you, follow you, reach out to you?
Yeah, Instagram is probably the best. My Instagram is at I am Sarah, Sarah with an A, Sara, Snow, Snow.
Okay, perfect, you guys. And it should be in the show notes. If you guys are ready for the hot seat, come and tell me why you're special. Sarah, this was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.